Number 20A.
We started yesterday with the Christianity Order, and we said that one main purpose of this week is to get a feel of these orders, the Christ Order, Christianity Order, and Science Order. And so we must try to see that we go over these tones again and again until it sinks into our consciousness and we feel that there is something we carry home that is of a different nature, so that the new paradigm somehow gets hold of our consciousness. I just go over what we did yesterday quickly. Christianity, we have seen, is the outcome of the Word and the Christ. It's the outcome of the working of the Christ idea. Therefore, the place value of Christianity is really at the point of idea, there where we consider the realm of idea, where we consider the universe of idea, and therefore in the focal point of Christianity we have the universe including man. Now, what is that universe? That universe, we know, is not something that is self-existent, but is actually the outcome of an origin. Therefore, in considering what the universe is, what the nature of the universe is, how big the universe is, we have to trace back the universe to that which lies behind it, to God. So, the definition of the order of Christianity in the glossary is showing that, because we have seen in the glossary the purpose is to take all these various phenomena, these terms that appear there, which is only a selection of many others, that Mrs. Eddy shows the method how to trace these phenomena back to God by substituting, as she said, the spiritual for the material definition of a scriptural word. So we replace a material definition with a spiritual definition. Also, she says that it contains the metaphysical interpretation of Bible terms, giving their spiritual sense, again, tracing biblical terms back to their spiritual sense, which is also their original meaning. And so we come back to the origin of the universe by tracing it back to God. That is what perhaps Mrs. Eddy has called also in one or the other terms, that God is the sum total of the universe. You can see now in that sentence, Mrs. Eddy, it's in Miscellaneous Writings, that she explains now once God, not through the nature of God, but through the universe, through his universe, as the sum total of the universe. This is actually what Christianity does. It takes the universe and asks, what is the origin of that universe? And so we see that the universe is equipped by God, that man is equipped by God, and therefore that every idea in the universe, whatever that idea is always equipped with the whole quality of God. That is the introduction we have had yesterday to show what is the direction that we must follow when we want to understand the Christianity order. Therefore, we could see that every idea first must be traced back to its origin, God, and further it cannot be traced back. Therefore, that full stop that then is complemented by a comma, so that becomes a semicolon, because every idea or every aspect of the universe, not only one aspect of the universe, must be traced back to God. So in the also perhaps something can be seen here, that Mrs. Eddy therefore began to see that God, being the sum total of the universe, could also be put the other way around, that the universe, the sum total of the universe, is therefore God. And that brought her, in the first edition of Science and Health, to these terrific statements that she made, that she always equated, so to say, the universe, including men, with the seven synonymous terms, with God. At that time, she didn't say that man is an idea of God or so, but much more pointed out that if we understand that universe spiritually, that that is actually God. I just quote a few references from the first edition of Science and Health, and you will see that these are statements that you would never make anymore in the later edition of Science and Health. But one can see that at the point of her revelation, she just could see that the whole universe was enlightened, so to say, with the presence of God, the omnipresence of God. Therefore, there is actually no difference between God and the sum total of the universe, that that is equal, that there is an isomorphic concept of both. So she would, for instance, say, at present we know not what we are, but hereafter, well, with the hereafter she meant when we have seen that we are not the mortal, not the material concept, but hereafter we shall be found love, life, and truth, because we understand them. See, she would never say that today, that we are found to be love, life, and truth, the synonymous term, but at that time where she did not yet use the more sophisticated explanation between principle and idea, she had that terrific sense on that influx that the whole universe is permeated by God, and that therefore the universe is God, that there is not a universe and somewhere a God, which would bring us to the conclusion that everything in the universe is actually God, and therefore she would put it that way. Or let's take another statement from the first edition of Science and Health, where she says, Jesus regarded himself principle. You see, not the idea of principle. He regarded himself principle instead of person. Another quotation, which is quite clear, is, she says, we are soul, spirit, and not matter. She didn't say at that time that man is spiritual, but not material. She just could see something which is absolutely in line with her revelation, namely that God cannot be split up in parts. And so she felt that because God permeates the whole universe, everything is God, so we are soul, spirit, not matter. Or another one that makes it plain, she says that we are spirit, and spirit is God, is undeniably true. Here we get the reasoning why she arrived at such a conclusion. That we are spirit, and spirit is what? Is God. This is undeniably true. Quite a strong statement. On another page she writes, Jesus' marvelous works are readily accounted for when we remember Christ is God, and that Jesus held all that he was God, and wrote from the standpoint of his God-being, and this was the science of being. So here she equates that Jesus held all that he was God. So that's why one can understand that even theology says, well, Jesus is God, because also Mrs. Eddy felt, well, if everything is just the one, infinite one, then from that one is only the one God, then everything that is of the nature of the universe is actually God himself. It is only afterwards that naturally she began to see how dangerous it is to explain it the way she did, because she could see that the reader who was reading this was not yet understanding that under man was understood only the idea of God. And so the reader, as a mortal, was reading that he was God's spirit, that we are, as she said, that we shall be found love, life, and truth. So that only afterwards, after other revisions of the textbook, she began to change these and began to see that actually the whole of God is the synonymous term, but that the synonymous term, the whole of God, has infinite aspects, has infinite expression, and that therefore every one of these infinite expression are not the whole of God, though they reflect the whole of God, therefore they are an idea of the whole. And then from that point on, she introduced the explanation of idea, that man is idea, and that he reflects God. But we can easily see how she arrived at that sense, which is very near really here to the Christianity sense, that the Christianity order, namely that fundamentally we should be able to trace everything back to God, because outside of God there is nothing. So this is rather logical. The only point is that at that point she did not distinguish between the whole and the parts, the whole and the infinite aspect of the whole. The moment you have an aspect of the whole, you have an idea of the whole, not a part, but an idea of the whole, a specific idea of the whole, and therefore no more the whole itself. When we consider this tonality of Christianity here, as she has put it, then perhaps we understand also more easily the Christianity order that we have been contemplating yesterday, which always goes out, therefore, from the nature of the universe, from the ideational universe, including men, and ask, what is God? Is this something that exists per se, or is it the outcome, the output, the effect of an origin, of a cause, God? So the Christianity order begins with principle. Why? Because the very first thing that we would ask about the universe would be, what is behind the universe? Are there many principles behind the universe, or is there just one principle behind the universe? And so the order starts with principle. Principle which says all ideas are my ideas, therefore from the standpoint of the universe we can see all ideas have one principle. So we had there in the first box that all ideas have one principle. We go out in this way from the universe. When we begin to see that all ideas have one principle, therefore then we ask, what is the whole nature of the universe? Does it consist of what? Does it consist of matter? And is the material universe governed by one principle, that behind the trees and flowers and animals and everything is one principle, as biology perhaps would say it, or as natural philosophy perhaps would say it? So we need another explanation, because that very first box is accepted by many people outside of Christian Science, that behind the trees and the flowers and the animals and the birds and the fishes and everything is one God, one principle, ruling principle. But this would not satisfy us, because that would mean that the material universe has behind itself one principle. Therefore, we must go on to a next question, to mind, where we say, now, this universe consists of what? Of ideas. All is idea. They are all ideas of mind and not of matter. Not of, they don't consist of matter or of mentality or of thoughts or of psyche, or of emotions, or of aesthetic concepts, sentiments, and so on. They only consist of divine ideas, mind. They are all, it's a divinely mental, spiritual universe. All is idea. That's what we had in the second box. So we have already established that there is one principle ruling the whole universe, that universe is a universe of ideas. Then the next question that comes up is at once, but what is the quality of those ideas of the universe? Are they just tiny little particles of the universe? Are they just tiny little expressions of that whole God? Or what is it? And so we have to see that each idea of the universe is identical in nature with the divine principle. That each idea, therefore, has the qualities of the whole, and we had there this terrific big law that we sometimes use at this point, that we begin to see, therefore, the quality of an idea is the quality of the Infinite One, that soul's identity, so that we can, in our practice, expand this whole concept very easily and can say, what does it mean, the quality of an idea is the quality of the Infinite One? And you can take any quality of an idea and can see that the power of an idea is the power of the Infinite One. The power of an idea is not just a little, tiny, insignificant power, but the power of an idea, because it's idea, and idea comes from mind. Therefore, the power of an idea is the power of the Infinite One. The intelligence of an idea is the intelligence of the Infinite One. The law of an idea, the law activity of an idea, is the law activity of the Infinite One. And you can take the ideas of mind and just always see that they are not just an insignificant, tiny little thing, but they are always the whole in expression. So you can go to spirit, and we see there in spirit that the substance of an idea is the substance of Infinite One, of Infinite Spirit, not just a little bit of substance, that the unfoldment of an idea is actually the unfoldment of the Infinite One, not just a little unfoldment, just not a weak unfoldment. You can go to soul and can see that the sinlessness and identity of an idea is the sinlessness and identity of the Infinite One. The unchangeability of an idea, the balance of an idea, is the balance of the Infinite One. The stability of an idea is the stability of the Infinite One. Or you can go to principle and begin to see the moment you touch an idea, that idea has spiritual power. How much spiritual power does it have? It has the power, the spiritual power of the Infinite One. It has the power of demonstration of the Infinite One. Just do that by rote, so to say, in a systematic way, just to build up within one's consciousness the impact that whenever you touch an idea, we touch not something little, but the Infinite One. Because we have to do that, because we have been trained for a whole lifetime that things which we touch in the spiritual are small and insignificant, powerless, and without law, without activity, and without intelligence, and I don't know what. And therefore we have to re-educate ourselves into another feeling about our universe, that if an idea touches us as being eternal, then it is eternal because it's eternal like God Himself. Or if we touch an idea of truth like dominion, we do not need to feel that we have perhaps dominion, that perhaps it will solve itself. But it's the dominion as an idea of truth is always the dominion of the Infinite One. Therefore has the whole dominion, and we just have to let it happen. So also at the point of love, that the plane of an idea is actually not a small little plan. It is a plan of the infinite one. It is a plan that reaches over eternity, and therefore is a plan that touches every point in the universe and takes in the assistance and the help of every idea in the universe, because it's an idea of the infinite one. So just use these things. See, in establishing the sense of Christianity, just culture that consciousness. This is practice at home. Take your quiet hours or quiet half hours. Take even those 5 minutes on the road, driving along the road. Take always here and there a few minutes where you don't have to think about something else, and just go through these great aspects of a new consciousness. Somehow we have to train ourselves, to exercise ourselves into that new consciousness, because the old consciousness will speak anyway. That is talking by itself. We have been acquainted with the false consciousness so intimately that it is a reflex consciousness. It talks to itself without that we think about it. And in the same way, we should culture ourselves into the new consciousness, so that that new consciousness speaks to us also in a reflex way, automatically, without that we think about it. It's just there. It sits there in consciousness and talks to us. That's God speaking to us, and that's what culture spiritual sense. We are at the point of soul, so that more and more we are in the position that if we meet the situation, we can look right through that situation, and something within us automatically begins to talk to us in a spiritual way, a spiritual sense, a spiritual understanding, a soul sense, and begins to talk, so that we not even have to think along the line now, what is the idea behind this whole trouble? What is the right idea behind it? Something within us speaks right away at that point. It's soul sense analyzing a situation and seeing the right idea and bringing it right back to an activity of God. That's how the new universe opens up. But when we have that sense that actually every idea that comes to us, or that every idea which our consciousness touches, is not just an idea that is isolated, but an idea of the infinite one, then still there is something missing. Namely, we feel, is it then so that every idea is an isolated idea of God? Or is that universe intricate relationship of all ideas? Is it a web of consistency of ideas? Is it a structure and an integrated whole? These are the questions that are asked and which Spirit answers. Spirit says, there is infinite reflection. What is that infinite reflection? We say in an abbreviated way, we say, each idea reflects each other idea. But naturally this is an abbreviated statement. It isn't that way. It is so that every idea being brought back to Spirit, to God, is related to every other idea of Spirit. So the reflection is always via God, and not so much a reflection just from idea to idea of His, as if there would not be one governing principle behind it. And only through that relationship of every idea to its principle is every idea blending with every other idea. And that's the point of Spirit. We know Spirit as infinite reflection. As infinite reflection, being therefore also the ground of demonstration. Because what is reflection? Reflection is understanding the interrelationship of the ideas, and that is always the basis for a demonstration. If we understand the interrelationship in arithmetic, we can demonstrate arithmetic and prove it. So that demonstration is actually only the outward manifestation and the expression of reflection. Now, here again, we come to one of our great exercises that we have seen right from the beginning, when John Dolly began to see that each synonymous term reflects every other synonymous term, he would naturally see that therefore also each idea would reflect every other idea. That an idea of mind would reflect the idea of spirit and the idea of soul, the idea of principle and of life and truth and love. And so we exercised, especially in syllabus class 2, we exercised the blending of ideas. So when we did that exercise, it was actually an exercise that belongs here in this box. It is an exercise to see the reflection of idea and idea, the blending of ideas. We considered the universe of ideas, and now at the point of spirit, each idea blends with every other idea. So again, we come to a great law here in Christianity that would ask us to do those exercises over and over and over.